The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
I'm Arthur Snell. A major war is taking place on the European continent with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, bringing you a series of special episodes to help you understand the crisis as it unfolds. This is Doomsday Watch. Hello and welcome to this special edition of Doomsday Watch. I'm delighted to be joined this evening by Romeo Kokryatsky, our favourite Ukraine correspondent and host of the Ukraine Without the Hype podcast. Romeo, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Romeo, we're speaking, it's Sunday night on the 11th of September, perhaps a portentous date. And in the last 48 hours, the Ukrainian military has undertaken a stunning operation. First off, what's your best understanding of where we're at right now here on Sunday night?
As far as we can tell, and I want to make it clear that official confirmation on a lot of the stuff that we're seeing in reports and on social media has not been provided. So a lot of this is kind of gleaning together a situation from videos of soldiers celebrating in cities and so on. But as best as we can tell, it seems that nearly all of Kharkiv Oblast, one of Ukraine's northern provinces, has basically been cleared. This is a gain of about 3,000 square kilometers in more or less 11 days.
Amazing. And Kharkiv, tell us about the significance of that city within your country.
I mean, Kharkiv is, or was pre-war, the second largest city in the country. It was a major hub, being situated pretty much 40 kilometers from the Russian border. So a major trade hub, a major cultural hub, and it represented one of Ukraine's kind of hearts or centers. If you consider Lviv in the west, Kyiv in the center, and then you have Kharkiv in the northeast. So it was and still is, I guess, an incredibly important city for Ukraine. And notably, the city did not suffer from any kind of pro-Russian tensions or sentiments, even during the initial Russian invasion in 2014.
And simply because of its location, it was one of the first cities to be taken by Russia at the start of this war in February.
Well, it wasn't taken exactly, but parts of the surrounding oblast, the surrounding province, were captured and held. Again, it's 40 kilometers from the Russian border. The Russians don't even need to move troops into Kharkiv Oblast itself in order to shell Kharkiv. And Kharkiv has been under constant missile and artillery barrage basically for 6 months straight. And major parts of the city itself have pretty much been reduced to rubble.
So, Romeo, I just want to zoom out slightly because things have been happening so quickly. But for the last probably 2 or 3 months, there's been a sense that the Russia's war on Ukraine has kind of slipped into a sort of stalemate, a static frontier, small advances backwards and forwards, lots of talk about how this would drag on for years. But there was also talk, and this was ongoing, although little detail, there was talk that Ukraine was planning its big operation to try to regain key bits of territory. So it seems that has now happened. So I suppose the first thing is, of course, you know, these are sensitive military questions. I'm not expecting you to give us answers in that way. But what's your sense of how far this might go?
It's due to a kind of media blackout that the Ukrainian military has enforced for the past few weeks. It's really hard to tell what the future plans of the armed forces are. And obviously, speculating on them can be a little fraught. But it does seem like the operation in the south of the country, the liberation of Kherson Oblast, which has also been occupied this time fully by the Russians since the beginning of the full-scale invasion, that operation seems to keep on trucking. It doesn't seem like there have been any major successes or failures on that front. And of course, the scale of the Russian retreat, I have to imagine, has been a little bit of a surprise to Ukrainian army command as well. I don't think even we expected the Russians to kind of fold as easily as it did. So what comes next is I think a question for the generals.
Yeah. Now let's talk about that Russian retreat. Most people, most listeners probably have seen some of the imagery, but for those that haven't, what can you sort of give us a characterization of what seems like a headlong rush for the exit by the Russian army?
I mean, it's, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners are aware, less a retreat or withdrawal, and it seems to be, in a lot of places at least, a full-on rout. They've left so much equipment. I think there was someone that quoted saying the amount of materiel that the Ukrainian army today was able to capture was more than the entirety of German military aid to Ukraine for the past 6 months. Just the scale of the amount of stuff that they left behind is hard to believe as part of any kind of irrational decision making on the Russian part. It really seems like they, in the most basic terms, broke and ran.
And what is the atmosphere like now? How are normal Ukrainians responding to these incredible developments?
I mean, I mentioned to a colleague that it seems to me that these are some of the golden days of the war. And he was absolutely ecstatic. I was in the office for a couple of days last week. And especially on, I want to say it was Friday afternoon, the security guy came around pretty much every desk and handed us all a beer. So the mood, as you can imagine, is quite celebratory. Everyone's quite pleased with how things are unfolding. I mean, Ukrainians have been waiting for a major victory like this, a major liberation like this for months, really. You mentioned the conflict seeming to lose momentum, and this was visible within Ukraine as well. Of course, everyone is aware of how long wars can last. So there's no undue hope that this is going to be a quick conflict. But that is exactly what has let Ukrainians kind of celebrate this much, that we were this successful in liberating our territory.
The wider context here, obviously, we look across to Moscow and, you know, there's various ridiculous statements have come out from the Russians talking about regrouping, which, you know, is one way to describe a rout. But of course, there's a sort of deeper question, which is, what do you have to do to the Russians to make them realize that they can't control Ukraine? So what's your feeling
well,
about...
Well, that's been a question Ukrainians have been struggling for centuries.
Yeah, right. So you're probably not going to answer it this week, but do you think you've got any more sort of clarity on that, given these really stunning developments?
It's hard to say how much of this. I mean, obviously, a military defeat on this scale, by all accounts, Russian defense lines collapsed at first contact with our forces. And it just goes to show that morale is incredibly important. And Ukrainian intelligence has been saying pretty much constantly that Russian morale was going down this whole time since the start. The Russians don't have the logistical capabilities. They don't have the command capabilities. But this was something that Russian leadership, well, specifically their dictator, Vladimir Putin, who is said to be micromanaging the war. He's a security official. He is not a military guy. So that may explain part of the massive military failures. But at the same time, because he's not a military guy, it's hard to really say what will go through his thick skull. It's not like the Kremlin has decided to offer its surrender to Kyiv just yet. So however much it's going to take to get the Russians to leave us alone, it seems it's going to be this plus a little more.
And of course, there are already Russian reactions. If I'm not mistaken, there's been targeting of civilian targets, I think, in Kharkiv and one other city.
In Dnipro as well, yes.
Right, in Dnipro, thank you. And, you know, tragically, of course, that is one way in which Russia can attempt, probably unsuccessfully, but attempt to try to intimidate the Ukrainian population, not to get too high on their own success, I guess.
And they've been doing this exact thing since February 24th. They'd constantly shell completely civilian areas with no military targets anywhere in sight. They'd consistently throw missile attacks at cities. Vinnytsia itself suffered from a massive missile attack on the center of the city in the middle of the week during the day, killing dozens of people. And it doesn't seem like they are reconsidering that tactic, despite the fact that it has really only emboldened us to keep resisting. Because why would we just surrender to the guy who is obviously happy to murder us on a whim?
If you're finding these war bulletins useful, you can support us by backing us on the crowdfunding app Patreon. You'll get the shows early, ad-free, and get exclusive merchandise, all from just £3 a month. Just search Patreon Doomsday Watch or follow the links in the show notes.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
So, Romeo, what do you think are the sort of key elements in the success of Ukraine's counterattack? Obviously, there has been, you know, an increase in certain types of weapons, as the famous HIMARS rocket systems and so on. What do you consider to be the sort of the factors that have led up to this?
I mean, I'm not a military expert, so I may be completely off the ball here. But from my civilian perspective, I should say, I think this is all down to timing. After the Ukrainian military announced the massive counteroperation in the south, Russian forces began to be redeployed from the Kharkiv front, especially, and as well as parts of the Donbas fronts, down to Crimea and to Kherson. This is a lot of men and a lot of material moving. They can't teleport instantly hundreds of kilometers to the south. So it seems that the Ukrainian military command took great advantage of this kind of momentary gap or momentary pause and struck. And it seems to have paid off quite well.
Yeah. So in some sense, it's a classic sort of diversionary tactic.
In some ways, yes. Though I do want to also say that that doesn't mean that the counteroffensive in the south was a feint as well. All the elements for a counteroffensive in the south are ready. All of the bridges connecting Kherson Oblast to Russian-controlled or Russian-occupied territory are destroyed. They can no longer resupply or provide reinforcements. I think Russian fighting capability has simply been degraded over the past 6 months to such an extent that they can no longer fight on two fronts simultaneously. And especially if they have a non-military person like Putin personally micromanaging, granted this is a rumor, but one I think holds out given the kind of strange tactical and strategic choices that Russia's made over the past 6 months, I think it's fair to say that the Russian military simply can't keep up with what a modern, equipped and trained, almost NATO or possibly already there NATO equivalent force can dish out.
Yeah. And I would also expect, I mean, this is speculation on my part, but the information that Putin receives is probably a long way from what is actually happening on the ground, because you would be a brave person who was able to tell him, well, Mr. President, actually, your forces don't have the weapons they need because we sold them corruptly. And, the tanks aren't working because we've been using cheap spare parts and all the rest of the accretion of factors over years of a sort of corrupt klepto state, which has now led to this moment here.
Yeah, interestingly enough, Russian military bloggers, which is kind of a clique of armchair generals in Russia that run very popular Telegram channels and that usually report news and information from the front. Obviously, they're full of propaganda as well. Over the past 11 days, there seems to be a little bit of a stabbed in the back myth forming there that they fail to hold on to Kharkiv because the army and the generals are all incompetent. A few have been brave enough to accuse the Tsar himself, to accuse Putin himself of incompetence, though most have been focusing on kind of the failures and underinvestment in the Russian military for the past 30 years. Which, I mean, props to them for realizing the problem. I don't know why that wasn't obvious to them before, but it seems that at least some of these guys have had a little bit of an unpleasant contact with reality.
Yeah. I suppose then, this leads to a lot of things that may or may not happen in Russia itself. Of course, the stab in the back concept, Dolchstoßlegende in German, was this sort of driving resentment in the kind of birth of German Nazism, the idea that they had been failed in World War I by cosmopolitans and Jews and so on. Now, that it's like any analogy, it doesn't map simply onto the Russian analogy, but there were rumors just a couple of days ago of the sort of possibility of a coup in Moscow. I'm not expecting you to know if there's about to be a coup in Moscow, although if you do know, please tell us. But what's your sort of feeling as someone who, you've spent a lot of time probably trying to figure out what the Russians are up to for your own safety and sanity? Do you think that these same military types who look at the failure and humiliation of what's supposed to be a great imperial power might think, well, we need a different leader now?
I'm sure, there's no way that thought has not crossed anyone's mind. However, the system that Putin has built has been almost entirely focused on making his position in the Russian hierarchy coup-proof. There's no independent media. There is no independent opposition. There's no independent anything. Because the economy, in real terms, is kind of simplistic, Putin can and has centralized pretty much all of it in his own physical person. This means that any unrest in Russia is liable to hurt the entire elite and not a section. And it doesn't seem like there is room for a portion of the Russian elite to carve out even enough of an independent power base to disagree with Putin politely to his face. That doesn't seem allowed. So I really don't see how this could. But at the same time, historically, there have been plenty of strongmen who suddenly and unexpectedly passed away either in their sleep or violently, and history moved on. Though, again, that doesn't seem like a likely scenario now.
On that last point, one thing from the sort of military analysts I've been reading, it doesn't look very likely that Russia is going to have the resources to make a sort of counter-offensive. It sort of excuse the unwieldy term. That then presents Russia with a really tough issue, which is that they set their prestige and ultimately having failed to take Kyiv, their rewritten objective for this war was to take and hold the Donbass. Now, of course, they still hold parts of the Donbass, but they are certainly not holding all of it, and it doesn't look like they'll be able to. So do you think there's a place for Russia to come to a negotiating table, or is this still Ukraine needs to drive Russia off every square foot of Ukraine?
I mean, that is what every Ukrainian feels, that we need to get the invaders off our land, and then we can sit down and talk about how much money they owe us for all the shit they broke.
Yeah.
To say it impolitely.
Yep.
Until that moment happens, negotiations are a joke. Even if the Russians were willing right now to negotiate, nothing they could say would mean anything. They have signed plenty of treaties. They have made plenty of promises, all to turn around and break them half the time, almost immediately. So they have zero credibility. And the only kind of assurance you can get from the Kremlin negotiating fairly is when they are physically unable to prevent you from enforcing your terms. Until that moment, there's not even a question of negotiation.
Yeah. And it's completely understandable given, you know, the events. We could go back in deep history, but even just of 2014 and then Minsk and then, you know, what the Russians did this year, clearly that it would be a foolish person who trusts a Russian assurance. A harder question, perhaps, and one I hope you don't mind me asking, is whether there's a place for Ukraine to find a way to avoid the risk of sort of creating a scenario akin to what happened to Germany at the end of World War One. In the end, the idea that if you humiliate a powerful country, it might come back and do it again, but worse.
To be honest, that's a concern I think that a lot of Ukrainians are struggling with right now. And there's a lot of different points of view here. Me personally, I believe that Europe's last empire, or last land empire, I should say, probably needs some rapid decolonization. That is, I personally don't believe Ukraine as a sovereign state is ever safe with a neighbor like Russia. Of course, other people think that it can simply be tamed or otherwise persuaded to leave us alone. As I said, there's a lot of different schools of thought here, and it's hard to say what position has more validity. But the simple fact remains that if Russia is allowed to get off without any serious, or I should say more serious, I don't want to say punishments, let's say negative incentives, then it will keep doing what it has been doing to Ukraine for centuries. That is quite simply how the Russian state has functioned for the entirety of its history. So something will have to be done to ensure that that centuries-long pattern of domination, exploitation, and imperial expansion is finally halted. And until that happens, I don't think Ukraine can be safe.
My final question, I really just wanted your kind of personal reflections. You know, lots of us have seen incredibly moving videos of soldiers liberating your fellow countrymen from what must have been a terrifying occupation. How does it feel for you personally to watch those?
I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit that I've teared up quite a few times watching these videos. It's probably why most of the country has been in a really good mood for the past few days. Because seeing these people be basically rescued from a lawless hellhole it's hard to overstate how proud that makes someone feel and how relieved, because these people aren't like strangers. I might not know them. They might live on the other side of the country, but they are still my countrymen. I would happily travel. I've been happily traveling all around Ukraine. And I can easily imagine any of these people being my friend or my neighbor. Or my family. So watching them run, you know, to these soldiers clutching like flowers or just crying is it's incredibly uplifting.
Well, we haven't always had something so uplifting to kind of finish one of these conversations on. So, Romeo, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us at short notice, late at night where you are. Of course, I don't want anyone listening to think that we're telling them the war is over, but this is an important and positive development. And so this comes with very good wishes from all of us listening here in the UK.
Thank you very much. And let's hope this string of success continues.
We hope you find these war bulletins valuable amongst the huge amount of information out there. So don't forget to subscribe and help spread the word by rating us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other app that has ratings. And if you really like the show, you can support us on the crowdfunding app Patreon. You'll get the shows early, ad-free, and help shape future episodes, all from as little as £3 per month. Just search Patreon Doomsday Watch or follow the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
It's a busy world out there. Once you've woken up and got on top of all your WhatsApps, your texts, your emails, and your DMs, then you've got another pile of stuff to get through. The news. Honestly, who's got the time? That's where Papercuts, the brand new podcast, comes in. Papercuts is your fast, funny tour of all the best bits of the papers, from the biggest scoops to the weirdest headlines to the definitely not made-up showbiz gossip. And it's out every weekday with me, Miranda Sawyer, and a host of guests, including tip-top comedian Marcus Brigstock. Marcus, what's your favourite thing about Papercuts?
It's the puns. It's obviously the puns. I mean, when we go through the papers and you see what creative beauties the people who work, particularly in the tabloids, have come up with. Often I think it's pun first, then story for them. Like, I've got one. Find a story to match this. But it's a really fun part of the podcast to see what they've come up with every day.
Especially the Daily Star.
Oh, the Star. Proud to love animals.
So if you want to be on top of the news and have a laugh while you're doing it, get Papercuts every day on your favourite podcast app. We're out around lunchtime, Monday to Friday. Perfect for a bit of me time in the middle of a busy day. That's Papercuts. We read the papers so you don't have to.